What's the most important resource that you have? If you really thought about this deeply, I think you'd come to the same conclusion that Joey and I did. It's time. In our newest book, What's Without Wall Street, The 3 Steps to Financial Freedom Through Passive Income, we talk about how are we tracking that time? What is the thing that we can do to get more of that time back?
That's right. If you've ever been listening to our podcast and thought, man, it would be amazing if I could take all the things that you guys have learned over the last 10 years and just summarize them, put them in some way to easily digest them and take action, that's what this book is all about. You're not going to want to miss it. Go to wealthwithoutwallstreet.com/new book and get your copy today.
Welcome to the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast, your guide to understanding how to get out of the Wall Street rat race and start your own mailbox money lifestyle. Now, don't let these handsome Southern draws fool you. These financial minds are teaching our country to enhance savings, increase cash flow, and create passive income, all without the help of Wall Street. Are you ready to break through? Now, here are your hosts, Russ Morgan and Joey Murray.
Joey, the Italian Stallion, brother. Good to see you today.
What's up, Russ?
Man, I'm so glad to be here. Last night, I'm sitting in bed with my wife. We're watching this movie. It was called All the Money in the World, the John Paul Getty story.
Okay, I'm not familiar.
You know who John Paul Getty is, right?
Well, he's that rich guy.
Yeah, not only the rich guy, he was the richest man in the world. And actually, I think what they said was the richest man in the history of the world at that point in time. He's the one who basically got the oil out of Saudi Arabia. He's the one that figured out a way. He built like the super tanker.
Huh.
That was his concept. And I haven't done a ton of research on John Paul Getty. I have used a quote that he has forever, the one that says, it's not about how much money you make, it's about how much money you keep. And when I was watching the movie last night, it was a good movie, not a movie to watch with kids, you know, it's an adult film, but it was really interesting because this guy was cheaper than cheap. They showed a scene in the movie where he was literally like washing his socks and his underwear in this huge hotel room because he was too cheap to pay for it. But it just got me to thinking about what we're doing with money and how are we planning for things and just interesting stories. So one of those I would encourage you to go watch.
Well, I mean, all that does is remind me of how you and I are probably close behind John Paul Getty with the Iron City Cattle Company.
Ooh, yeah. I mean, did we get a check in the mail those days?
We had dollars on that check. I mean,
stacking them up.
Hundreds of them.
Hundreds of dollars. By the way, if you haven't heard us talk about this before, Joey and I are silent. Like, when I say silent, I mean, like, yeah, we don't talk. I think the extent of our my talking
that's
is
hard
like,
to believe.
It's like a thumbs up on a text message with some of our buddies who have gotten us involved into this seeming sales business.
Yes, we just received a check from our boy Anvil.
Yeah, that's our bull.
Our Brangus bull who sold some semen.
Yeah. Well, he didn't technically sell it. He produced it, right?
He did his job. We did our job. Or actually,
we didn't.
Jamie, our friend.
Yeah, by the way, thank you, Jamie, for doing that. I know you're listening to our podcast. We really appreciate you as a partner. You're exactly what we need when it comes to this sort of stuff.
No doubt. And that's why I'm so excited about our guest today.
Well, our guest, yeah, we have a book author. She's written several books. One of the ones that we're going to really be focusing on in this episode is called Farming Without the Bank.
Right. Mary Jo Ehrman, our great friend from North Dakota.
North Dakota, yeah. You know,
I don't know if I said that.
It's tough. Whenever you listen to somebody with an accent, I know you and I, we speak such proper English.
Yeah.
It's tough whenever you're talking to somebody with an accent to understand. So I hope you'll be able to really get through that episode with her. But she has a lot of really cool things to talk about and the way that the banking system is affecting farmers. So if you're a farmer, you're going to just go, oh, yeah, you guys, this is something I've been dealing with forever. But if you're not, you really get to see the impacts of the banking industry on a business.
Listen in.
Welcome in, Mary Jo. We're excited to have you on the show today. How are you? You're in Las Vegas, right?
I am in Las Vegas visiting today.
I mean, you're such a Las Vegas person. For those of you who don't know Mary Jo, like she edifies what Las Vegas, like what it would be, right? Just fast, loose, like just throwing money around.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm standing off the balcony and I'm just like doing the whole, like, money's just flying off the balcony into the pool downstairs.
By the way, you and I met how many years ago? 5 years ago?
I have been an IBC practitioner for 8. We didn't probably meet then, but I remember you from my very first conference.
Well, I remember you and I met, and it's hard not to remember Mary Jo because her accent out of North Dakota. We in the South have very little accent. It's very clear that we speak this fluent English. But those of you out of North Dakota have this different twang that it just draws me in. And then I read this book, Farming Without the Bank. And shortly after we had that meeting, I drove all the way out to Kansas. My wife's family's from Kansas. They're all farmers. They just had gotten finished cutting their fields. And I'm like talking to them about the things I was reading in your book. And I said, what sort of issues do you guys have on a yearly basis with the banks and having to get loans for crops and stuff like that? And I had them going. I mean, I was speaking their language and they're looking at me. They're like, is he wearing like dress shoes with jeans? What is this guy?
What does he know about this?
They were like, wait a second, but he's talking my language. And I thought, man, this little yellow book. So I got home and I sent them copies of your book. And now I'm a part of that family. They feel like I know them. So tell us, Mary Jo, why is it so important for farmers and ranchers to live without the bank?
In a nutshell, because they're putting their livelihood up as collateral for everything that they do. I mean, you and I could lose our business tomorrow, but we'd have a house. We could go find a job. Not that they can't find a job necessarily, but they lose their house. They lose their identity. They lose absolutely because the family farm is collateral.
Okay. So for those that don't know the whole way that that plays out, give us an example. Like what makes it so different for that farmer as far as how the farm is a collateral and all that? Like how does the bank intertwine with that? Give us some more details on that.
Let's talk city kid language for you two.
That's right. Bring it down to our level.
Hey, wait a second, Mary Jo.
Russ, what your in-laws are going through.
Wait. I mean, we can speak this language. Joey and I are cattlemen.
I mean, come on. You know that.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to ask you about that. Are you sure you have a bull or a steer? I mean, I can see your faces. So neither one of you even know what a steer is by the look on your face.
Well, I can look at... you know, put my head up a bull's butt and tell you what kind of stick it has. But I'd just rather take the butcher's word for it.
I mean,
oh, that's funny.
Hey.
Back to your question, Joey. In a farming operation, the bank is basically garnishing their wages. They have control of their paycheck. So if I, as a business owner, don't make my house payment, big deal. Nobody takes commission from me, and then I get the rest. Wells Fargo or whoever's holding my mortgage doesn't say, oh, you know what? We're going to take all your commission until your house is paid and all your bills are paid, and then you get the rest. And that's exactly what happens with farmers. The bank's name is on every single paycheck. They take cattle to the barn, whatever they're selling. They're taking their commodity to the barn, and the barn puts the bank's name on that paycheck. Now, in some cases, a farmer might say, well, great, they just release it to me. It's not a big deal. And that's what I heard about, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. Well, it's not a big deal, Mary Jo. They just release it to me. Well, sure, they're going to release it to you when corn is $7 a bushel. They're not going to release it to you today when corn is $3.25. So now the problem comes in with the banker told me that I need to buy this tractor and I can't make that payment. So now that money isn't getting released to the farmer. And so we also have to look at whose responsibility is it to run that farm?
Did I hear you, Mary Jo, say the banker told the farmer that they need to buy a piece of equipment?
I'm sorry, let me rephrase that. The banker will say you can buy the piece of equipment. The accountant will say you should buy that piece of equipment.
Okay.
So what happens in most instances is that the farmer will say, okay, I'm going to buy that piece of equipment because the accountant said that I should, the banker said that I can, and corn is $7 a bushel. Life is great. 5 years later, corn is 3 and a quarter. we have financed that for 7 years. We can't pay that payment at 3.25 corn, but we could pay for it at 7. So now the farmer comes in and says, the banker told me I could buy it. And the banker's the one worried about me making that payment. And he's not letting me have any living expenses because I can't make that payment. It's a big circle of whose responsibility is it, as well as the farmer. We've given control to the banker, we've given control to the accountant, and we're not running our own operation. And we don't know how else to get out of that control.
When I hear that scenario, and to break this down for city folk, right? This is really for you, Joey, because I mentioned a second ago, I'm part of the community. Mm-hmm. She just gave an example of what people did in the 2006, 2007. They went out and bought like houses. They bought nice cars. They bought condos at the beach. All these external items, these luxuries that they went and bought because interest rates were low. Their investment portfolios were running at their highest levels and they could just go borrow money cheaply. But whenever things changed, the environment changed, that's when people were sitting there going, what am I going to do? Now, the one difference I heard in this, which is so interesting to me, is that, like you said, those people decided whenever money did come in from their regular jobs, they just decided, look, I'm not going to pay for any of those things. And that's why all those things just fell apart. But they still got to eat. You're saying that a farmer doesn't even get a check before those things are paid.
Right. Yep. So they're not eating. The banker is then saying, hey, I'm repoing that piece of equipment. I'm taking the farm. I mean, right now, as we speak, commodity prices are so low that farmers are losing farms, especially the dairy industry. Dairies are selling out daily right now because the cost of milk is not okay with what the farmer is getting. So people don't understand that when you buy a loaf of bread, the farmer gets pennies for whatever that loaf of bread actually costs you. And that's what they get to pay for every piece of equipment, the fertilizer, the fuel, the chemical, repairs on the tractor, whatever the overhead is. But we have to have control. And the farmers have to get back control because they have completely lost it. They've thrown their hands up in the air and said, there's not another option. We need millions of dollars a year to operate. There is an option.
Yeah. So, and I love this. I want to kind of point out from your book, Mary Jo, just you show how farming has changed over centuries, right? The actual equipment that's being used, the technology that's available now, the fertilizers, all the different things that are being utilized have changed and continued to progress and so on. But actually how it is being financed is still in the dark ages, right? I mean, to explain that, I mean, you grew up in a farm. That's kind of what challenged you to start thinking this way, right? I mean, you started to see this as an opportunity.
Correct. 100 years ago, we were using horses and plows. So I'm just going to ask you guys a quick question. At what point do you think we went from horses and plows to tractors? What year was it, do you think, that we changed that?
I'm going 1950.
I'm going 1965.
1953, I believe it was.
Oof.
Good job, Russ. I mean, think about it. 1953 was not that long ago. I mean, we went from like a tiny little tractor in 1953 to this massive equipment today. It is such a huge change from 53 to now, but yet we still finance it like we did 100 years ago. I have this t-shirt. One of my clients had it on and he had a Facebook post of it. And I said, hey, can I buy that t-shirt from you? And he's like, what? Like, I need that t-shirt. It says Farm Credit Services, 100-year anniversary. And that was 2 years ago. So I forget what year it was, but it was a little over 100 years ago that a law was passed that allowed banks to lend money to farmers. Since then, they have lost all control of their finances.
Wow. It seems to me, Mary Jo, and I'm just going to ask this question, with all the progression of equipment and technology and everything that's being used, you would think that farmers and ranchers and cattlemen are able to make a much higher profit, right? Things have gotten more efficient, let's say. But is it true that that's happening, or has the way they've been financing, eaten into that?
the way they've been financing has eaten into that. So commodity prices are high when the dollar's low. And when the dollar's high, commodities are low. So right now, the dollar's high. So the cost of goods is more per dollar, right? I mean, they're always on the opposite side of the scale. I saw something the other day and I just glanced at it real quick. So I don't know the exact numbers, but they were actually making more per bushel years ago than they're making today with equipment and input prices the same.
Wow.
I mean, a new combine, $600,000. If you're operating 5,000 acres or 6,000 acres, you're at $1 million of input costs. When I say inputs, I mean seed, fertilizer, chemical, fuel, land rent. That's just some of those recurring costs. That is not including the payment for the tractor, the combine, the seeder, the sprayer, the land that they've bought. Most of these farmers are, you know, if we're farming 5,000 acres, we might only own 1,000 of it if we're lucky. The rest of it's all rented.
Wow.
So now where is our collateral? Because we can't use rented ground as collateral either.
When you're sitting there in front of an audience and you're doing this on a regular basis, how are you helping them see a way out of what seems to be desperation in some situations, especially right now with what you're talking about, the price of crops being so low?
It's cash flow. Farmers and most business people, like I'm going to say farmers don't understand cash flow, but I'm sure you guys see it on the real estate side and the business side as well. You know, 99% of my clients are farmers. They don't understand cash flow. So if I ask a farmer, what are your total operating costs? They won't know that answer. But if I say, what is your line of credit? They'll tell me, oh, it's $1 million. But their operating costs might be 1.3. So where is that $300,000 going? That's cash. You know, their gross income might be 1.5. So they've made $500,000. 300 of it, they paid cash for fertilizer, chemical, seed, feed, whatever. But where did the other 200 go? We're not keeping track of our cash flow because they're cash poor and asset rich. Assets aren't cash flow. We need cash flow.
Well, in your book, you make the quote, it's foolish to think somebody will take better care of your finances than you will. It sounds like in your workshops, and I know in your book, you're laying out like this needs to fall on your shoulders.
Oh, absolutely. Yep. And I don't hide it. I mean, I am full blown, no sugar-coated German, right? So I'm always throwing it back on the farmer. And I might seem harsh, but I really learn from my brother. Because he'll call me and he'll say, I'm so mad at the banker. He's concerned I can't make my tractor payment. I'm like, well, why? Well, he told me to buy it. I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. Hold up. Who wrote the check? Like, you wrote the check. You signed your name to that check. So don't blame the accountant. Don't blame the banker. Ultimately, you are the one that decides and you need to pay attention to your cash flow. I get it. I understand that that is not your unique ability. But if you're not paying attention to it, at least enough to understand it, who's running that operation? It's sad, but it happens in every industry. You need to know enough to be a little bit dangerous, enough to ask some good questions of your accountant. Like, why am I buying a $600,000 piece of equipment to avoid $200,000 in taxes? You still have to pay another $400,000 for that piece of equipment. So who do we hate more, the banker or the IRS? Because that's really what we're deciding when we avoid taxes. And we borrow from the bank to buy something to avoid those taxes. Like right. That's exactly what Nelson tells us. We have to think. We're not thinking. We're programmed. We're not thinking.
And Mary Jo, just for some of our folks that may be hearing this the first time, they don't know, Nelson Nash is who we're talking about. The founder of the infinite banking concept. And that is what Mary Jo has applied so succinctly to the farmer, the rancher, the cattleman. Mary Jo, for those, let's say the farmer's listening to this right now and they're saying, okay, I get it. I'm feeling trapped. I'm feeling like I need a way out, a different way of financing my operation. Help me understand what are the steps that I should be taking to get to this point. It seems insurmountable. So give me some direction on that.
So we first have to understand this is a great start, but it might not be a finish in the aspect of the cash flow. So you didn't start farming 5,000 acres overnight. You didn't have 500 head of cattle overnight. You started small and we grew into it. That's exactly what's happening with the infinite banking concept. Obviously, the first step for anybody is to read the book, Farming Without the Bank.
Which we're going to have that link on our show notes as well. So I just want to make you aware of that. Continue, Mary Jo. Sorry.
So we've got the book and we've got the scenarios and we've got case studies in there that say, hey, this is how it can work. Now we have to start that process and starting that process small and growing into it. If you're 60 years old and you have a $2 million operating note, I'm going to tell you that you're never going to get away from the bank before you die. It's just probably not going to happen unless you are in some sort of a position where you have tons of extra income because you're beating the commodity market. What's going to happen though, is you're going to have the death benefit to pass to your heirs. And that death benefit is going to help them keep the family farm. That death benefit is going to help them create the legacy that you started. And so in that process of you being 60 to death, can we get some of that control back to you rather than all of it? It's not an all or nothing approach. We need to starting the generations and creating the generational knowledge of how to understand and utilize money is huge. But some control is better than none. I have a farmer right now who I think he's in year 5 or 6 of his policy. Anyway, young guy in his 30s. So he was working at the local coal mine and he was doing great. And we had a plan and we're putting this money into policy and he's borrowing it to buy bulls and, you know, he's holding calves over. He's got loans on the policy and he was paying them back and life was great. And the goal was at 5 years, he was going to take loans against the cash value, not pay them back. And then at year 5, he was going to have his 500 head of cattle. He was just going to hold heifers over every year, not sell them. So he had no money to pay the loans back. Guess what happens? Year 3, dad has a brain tumor, goes blind. He had to quit his job, buy the family ranch. And he was able to do that because on the banking side, his cash value loans didn't look like loans on his balance sheet. So now the bank gave him more money. Otherwise, the bank is going to look and go, you have $90,000 of cash value loans. You're over. Your debt to income ratio is not okay. We can't lend you any more money. But he was still able to save the family ranch because he had loans there. And on top of that, he's uninsurable. So the policy is on his mom's life. So wow. Should she pass away, he's now going to be debt-free. And that's going to all be ranch debt hanging out in that policy.
It's so insightful what you just talked about. Joey and I have done several podcasts on richer legacies and what does it look like to think generationally. And as a farmer, you think that way because the land that you're farming is land that your parents, your grandparents, great-grandparents, and further in some scenarios have farmed. And the person who listens to this podcast is a business owner, Mary Jo, and they're an entrepreneur. They're wanting to be successful. But I think this applies to you as well. If you're not a farmer and you're listening to this, you can think of what you just said, Mary Jo, that I don't have to always have immediate success on my level. I didn't get to where I had, 50 rental houses overnight. Right. I didn't get to where I own 5 different businesses in a month. Right. But I have to start somewhere. And what is it that I want to do so that the next generation doesn't have to reinvent the wheel? I think there's a lot of wisdom in that farming generation. You're helping them through your book. And
can I stop you 1 second?
Yeah.
The farmers aren't thinking that way though, Russ. The farmers are not saying, oh, this is awesome for the generations to come. Most farmers and ranchers are saying, I had to buy it from my mom and dad. You have to buy it for me because that's my retirement, is to rent the ground to you. And upon my death, you're buying it from your siblings who aren't farming. So right. We're going back and buying it every generation. And if we leave death benefit on my website, farmingwithoutthebank.com, if you go to blogs, there is a generational wealth blog. And I actually take the death benefit and I roll it into more life insurance. And by the end of the fourth generation, we're paying 18 cents for every dollar of death benefit, income tax free. A farm is a business. You work to build that business. Why are you not protecting it for the next generation? I don't understand why you get up every day to do what you do if you're not going to protect it, if you're not going to make sure the next generation had it better than you. And it's not about leaving that next generation rich and spoiled. It's about leaving that next generation with some hope. Because guess what? Let's just use my brother as an example. 47 years of blood, sweat, and tears beside my dad. Every single day of his life, he has done nothing besides farm. And yet, as a parent, they think, well, I had to buy it. Well, for gosh sake, seriously? Yes, you had to buy it. They put in just as much effort to create that farm as you did. And in most cases, those older farmers aren't involved in the day-to-day decision of what kind of chemical we're going to put in, what kind of seed we're going to plant, what kind of equipment we're going to buy. Those younger farmers are deciding that. The older farmer is the truck driver, the combiner, the guy sitting in the piece of equipment, and he's reaping the rewards of the nutrition of the soil because the younger son or daughter has made those decisions. So let's not discredit the younger generation for deciding, hey, we're going to continue this farming operation. Let's make sure we plan for that and create some sort of retirement income outside of having to sell off the farm to do that or rent the ground out to do that.
In your book, you lay out some choices. I want to go through just a couple of these. And this is early on when somebody's identifying the infinite banking concept and how does this apply to my situation? You start out choice number one, you need to work with someone who understands this and that results in success. But also you mentioned that not everybody takes that option. Some people may meet somebody and they don't always follow through. Walk me through kind of your experience in that.
It might just not be a good fit. It might not be ready. It might not be good timing. But I ask you, if we met in 3 years from today and we didn't do business, what would have changed in your operation different from today? Nothing. Mm-hmm. So yeah. You can decide to do nothing. I mean, I have people this year that read my book 2 years ago. Guess what? They're in a far worse position today than they were 2 years ago when they read the book. But it wasn't painful enough 2 years ago to do anything. Today, with commodity prices the way they are, it's so painful they're looking for an out. Do you want to wait to do something until it's too late, or do you want to start when it's more comfortable?
How many times do you run into somebody who says, I've got a local guy here in town I deal with, and he sold me insurance on my tractor, and we bought some term insurance from him. I'm just going to let him handle this.
Could be a daily basis, probably. It is often. I'm not meant to probably do business with everybody. And this is how I look at it. If you want to go to your local agent, you can go there, but ask the question of why he didn't present this to you before you took the book in. So yeah, that's my number one question.
If something is so good and you haven't told me about it, why would you be sharing with me now just conveniently when I introduce it to you? Yeah, yep. That's a good question.
You need to understand what you're doing. So if you want to take it to the agent next door because he's your buddy and he says, well, yeah, I've heard about that. Okay, he's heard about it, but does he know? I always tell people, if you want to go work with that guy, that's fine. I'm happy to look at the illustration he gives you and I'll tell you if it's right or not. And I'll look at that illustration and it's completely 100% wrong. We're here to create wealth, not destroy it. We're here to sell the correct tool. For me, I'm here to save family farms and I'm here to take care of, I call them my farmers, because every farmer in the country is essentially, in my head, my farmer. And if we're not going to do it right, don't do it at all.
Tell me, Mary Jo, this. You've met a lot of farmers over the years doing your book and have done many, many speaking engagements. The part that is so interesting is the success and the stories that you're hearing from them. Just share with me one or two stories that I know that's what keeps me and Joey going on a daily basis when our clients tell us about those examples of how this concept has saved their house, you know, when they had when they lost a job, or it created a monster opportunity for them that they would have never seen. I mean, Joey changed his career because of this. What's one or two stories that just stick out to you that you just love to come back to because it just makes what you do fun?
Well, obviously I already shared the one that's probably one of the more profound stories that I have. I love when I can get a whole family to understand it. Like right now I've got some poultry farmers that mom and son, they get it. And so the whole family is creating that family banking system. We've created a system or a estate plan. For me, it's more about an estate plan that, you know, the death benefit's going to take care of the kids off the farm, or the death benefit's going to go to help the kids on the farm to operate. I'm going to be honest, I haven't had anybody die yet. I'm going to knock on wood in front of me. But the day that that happens, we're going to see that somebody is set up correctly. I have some farmers right now who dad passed away. I have several farmers right now, in fact, that dad passed away and left death benefit. But he only left enough death benefit to pay for the debt, not enough death benefit to operate. So if we have let's just say we have $500,000 of debt, the debt's paid off, but operating is $1 million. So now we can't farm that ground because the bank's not giving that $1 million to the son because he doesn't have the collateral of that $1 million. He doesn't have the history with the bank. Could have that changed everything had we had more death benefit than we needed to pay for expenses? I have another client who her husband passed away and we took $600,000 of death benefit and turned it into $3.1 million on her. And she had $600,000 of cash value to operate with.
That's a huge transformation right there.
It's huge. And it's a sad situation because he passed away. The estate plan was in order. When his dad passed away, he was to buy his siblings out over a 10-year period of time. I call them the vultures. So as soon as dad passed away, the vultures came out and they wanted their money instantly. He had the farm paid for. He had to refinance $1 million of the farm to pay the vultures. And in the process, died of a heart attack at 55 years old because they wanted their money today. So now she's left to farm with the kids. You know, they have $600,000 of death benefit. But now if something happens to mom, we have $3.1 million. And we only paid $600,000 for $3.1 million. Do the math. That's pennies on the dollar. And she had $600,000 today to operate with.
That's awesome. Well, I can't thank you enough for taking the time out for being with us today. For those who are listening, farmers, ranchers, business owners, whoever you might be, I think just some of the themes that we can take away from this are there is a true prison that we have essentially been brought into in terms of the banking industry, Wall Street, as we've talked about numerous times on this podcast. And there is a way out. There's a breaking free opportunity. Mary Jo's just very astutely brought us down to the level of what a farmer is going through on a daily, yearly, generational level and how to break free in that case. I want to point everybody to our show notes to get a link to the book, to order your own copy. We'll have additional resources there. Do not hesitate to go out and get educated on this, to take that next step to break free personally from what you may be dealing with. Mary Jo, thank you, thank you, thank you for being with us.
Absolutely, anytime. Thanks for having me.
Did we feel a little bit out of our league there when we were trying to act like we knew something about the cattle industry?
I mean, just because you own a few bulls and a few cows in Iron City does not put you in the same league as Mary Jo.
No, it didn't. I mean, we were sitting there talking and she's like, okay, by the way, let me just break this down for you here. But it's so good to hear that sort of restrictions that exist within the banking world. Because even if you're not in the farming world, you still have the pressures of cash flow and access to cash.
I mean, it seemed to me like
she brought to the attention that this is such a big deal in the farming industry. But if we really all look at ourselves, what is the impact the banking industry is doing on us, on our business?
Yeah. And how are we really trying to impact future generations? Just the generational mindset of farmers, one, having to just think about, I've got to sell this business to my kids because it's my only way out, which it was kind of interesting as we were talking about that. But, you know, when you think about it, the way that we have to train our children, I mean, my wife's a dentist, right? If my daughter wants to inherit the dental practice, what does she need to do?
She's got to go through all the training herself.
She has to become a dentist. You can't be like, oh, here you go. I think that's smart in the way that farmers are really doing that. They're truly teaching. If you want to be in this business, you got to earn it and you got to work within it.
Russ, you're exactly right. I mean, the importance of handing down the information from one generation to the next is crucial. And by the way, we have the godfather of the infinite banking concept in our studio.
Yeah. I mean, next week, I'm so excited to be sharing with you the episode we did with Nelson Nash. There's not every day you get to sit down with somebody with that sort of wisdom and that sort of impact on lives. Just hundreds of thousands of lives across the world have been impacted by the books that he's written with Becoming Your Own Banker, Building Your Wheelhouse of Wealth, the bank notes that comes out on a monthly basis. Obviously, your and I's lives have been completely transformed because of his teachings. And to have him in our office teaching about where it all began and what's happened since is really cool. I want you to listen in to this episode for you're going to get some of the like nuggets of where all of our teachings have really originated from.
Listen in to this small clip here.
This thought that I saw that you need for finance is greater than you need for protection, and that life insurance companies, the way that they're designed and so forth, what dividend paying whole life insurance is all about, is the perfect answer that people have been totally overlooking. And although the world doesn't see it, I've been cursed with seeing this thing, and I can't quit.
You can't face it.
I've got to do something about it.
This has been the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show to break free of the Wall Street mindset and begin building wealth on your own terms in places you understand so that your wealth will never run dry. See you next episode.